Welcome to the Big Squid RC Podcast. This is episode 19. My name is Tim. Thank you for joining me yet again on another fun-filled adventure into the world of radio control. For this episode, I was joined virtually by Tekin Prez Jim Campbell, and we had a really fun chat. It's always fun to just kind of sit back and let some of these folks from within the RC industry just let loose and share their stories of how they got into the hobby, how they got into whatever career path that they're in now having to do with RC. It's just phenomenal. And I love a good story. And this was another great opportunity for me just to, again, sit back and let Jim tell his story about how he got to where he is now, essentially taking over Tekin, buying it, moving it from California to Idaho, and from there, just creating a very well-known brand within the RC world. So, just a fun chat. We talked a little bit of racing. We talked a little bit of drag racing. We talked crawling. We talked a lot of stuff in the almost hour-long chat. So, I hope you'll enjoy it. I know I had a great time listening to it and chatting with Jim. Now, let's get right to it. Here is Jim Campbell from Tekin. And joining me on the Big Squid RC Podcast is Jim Campbell from Tekin. Jim, welcome.
Hi, Tim. Good to hear from you.
Likewise. I hope everything's been going well for you. We've exchanged some emails lately, and we are just at the tail end of Christmas time, staring at 2021 in just a few days. So I hope everything is going well. I hope you had a great holiday season, and hope you have some fun plans for New Year's as well.
Yeah, we always enjoy the holidays here at Tekin. You know, we live up in the mountains, kind of hiding away from the cities, and we like our fun time for sure. So this is an important time. Plus, we're buried in snow. Yeah, so you might as well go out and enjoy it.
Indeed. All right. So we haven't spoken before, and I always like to get kind of the origin story for the people that I talk to in the industry. When and where did your RC adventure begin, and how did that ultimately get you to a career in the RC world?
Well, that can be a big story. Okay. Short version, I've always been into RC, and I'm an engineer by trade and understand all the things that go on in RC, the motors and the speed controllers. And honestly, we found out that Tekin had gone out of business, and it just seemed like it didn't make sense. It was a heck of a brand, and we checked in on it, and it turned out there wasn't any real good reason other than the guy running it just shut the doors. He'd done it long enough. Wow. And it had been around a long time. You know, Tekin and Novak were pretty much the choices back in the day, and the timing was right. The whole industry was headed towards LiPos, brushless motors. Everybody had to redo their products. It was going to be a complete rollover, and we knew how to do it. And so we scooped up the company and loaded it all in a couple of semi trucks with a lot of stuff we shouldn't have brought home, and drove it all up to Idaho and set it back up, and then redesigned all new products and just put it back on the market, and have been rocking ever since.
Wow. So Tekin was originally in California, correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Tekin was down there, not far from Novak, actually. Okay. In fact, Bob and Kevin, who are the two guys that really made the electronic speed controllers for the RC market, and a few others were making stuff, but those were the two guys. They were pushing each other, and back in the day, that was the choices.
Okay. All right. Do you have a favorite area of the hobby that you personally like to dabble in?
Oh, man, and you know, it's all fun. I still love a good two-wheel drive buggy on a track that's not perfect. It's a little tricky to drive. It's, you know, if you can drive a two-wheel drive buggy in moderate conditions, you can drive anything. And I still like the track race. But I got to admit, the rock crawling is a lot of fun, the adventure side of things. So many ways to enjoy the rock crawler side of things and just going for a good hike and even just some monster trucks out tearing it up. And, you know, this new drag racing thing has just exploded. I'm not too into that one, but I think I would enjoy it and probably will set some of those up when the snow's not on the ground.
Right.
But I, overall, I still enjoy the competitive racing side of it. Definitely.
Okay.
And even a TC, I enjoy TC. I just like a little more variety, I think, over time.
Okay. Rock crawling for me has been my go-to, but seeing other areas emerge, especially in the last couple of years, like drag racing. You know, I live in Wisconsin, so right now we're getting snow as I speak, and not good for drag racing. Good weather for building a dragster, but that's an area that really is calling to me. Whether or not I actually go and build one yet remains to be seen. But that's definitely an area, and seeing that boom is definitely something that just kind of caught me off guard. And we'll circle back into drag racing a little bit later, because I want to get some of your additional thoughts from you on that. But let's jump over to, you know, Tekken, and you mentioned it's got a lengthy history. You know, can you give us a somewhat quick overview of, you know, the company? It was shortly after you took it over.
A lot of engineering, a lot of prototypes, a lot of products that had to be done from the ground up, which is really what makes us different than most of the brands. And I don't mean it too derogatory, but there are very few brands that actually design their products from the ground up and understand the selection of the components, the layout, the software, all the things that really matter. And, you know, there's just a lot of common platforms out there with brands on them. Mm-hmm. And you know, it takes a lot to make a product like that. So, and it took us quite a few years to get things really rolling well, especially from the ground up. You know, was the company was out of business, and so there wasn't a lot happening, but it was amazing how quick people were to say, sure, what do you got? And that's really what we bought, was a free ride to the shelf. As long as the products were good, you knew it was going to work.
Sure.
Because people were happy to take it back in. They had a long history with Tekken. And you know, I think, you know, there was a lot of just moving stuff around. The amount of stuff we brought out of that place, it was quite a treasure trove of things that you didn't know if they were valuable or not. You know, boxes and boxes of parts. It was probably $20,000 when it was new, and now it isn't worth $20.
Oh, wow.
In fact, it cost you money to go get it recycled. You know, components, because they did everything in-house. You know, they crimped all the connectors, cut all the wires, stripped everything. I mean, they did it all. Wow. You didn't have these OEM abilities like you do now. You just pick a color and order 50. I mean, you had to do every piece. And so there was a lot to it. We still have an awful lot of it in stores, to tell you the truth. I have, I think, 10,000 displays for the BC-112 chargers, if anybody needs one.
Wow. You know,
what do you do with those, huh? You know, right. 50,000 JST plugs or something, you know, caps, resistors, FETs, tons of stuff, heat sinks, tens of thousands of heat sinks of Holy products God. That didn't get built, because he really shut it down without much notice. I mean, I kid you not, when we went into that building, it was as if people were there yesterday. It had been 2 years. There was dust on everything, but they just turned off the lights and everybody left.
Wow.
There was coffee cups, soldering irons, product finished, product half finished, product in process, orders that hadn't been filled, and finished product on the shelf that could have filled those orders. You know, it was a crazy situation. So we did get a lot out of that.
Wow.
But then you had to start over. You know, we had this whole new brushless thing going on that everybody was learning. And we were still on brown cells for a while there, but you knew the lipos were going to take over in a hurry. I mean, how mm-hmm. could they not? Oh, it was a long process, that's for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like it. I'm just sitting here, mouth hanging open at all the work you had to do to get things rolling. But you're here now, which is a testament to all the work that you did put into it. When you just got rolling with Tekken, what were some of your best selling products back then? And why do you think, you know, what was the magic to those products?
Well, we were still on the tail end of brushed. And so we made some new brush controllers, the FX series, with new technology. We were still selling the G11, which was an original Tekken product that we went in and changed the software and some components and kept selling it because we had parts to make thousands of them. But the FX was first. But brushless was right there on the door. That transition happened pretty quickly. And we nailed that pretty well. We came out with a mini system first, but then we came out with that RS and 10 scale, and it was working good. And then Boost you know, that's really what made everything go crazy when we started adding timing into these ESCs. And it worked so good that they had to outlaw it, and we had to. The cars were way too fast. There was no stock class. But I would say that's really what put us on the map, because for about maybe a year, maybe even two, you didn't even have a chance if you didn't have our controller in your car, until the rules kind of caught up and everybody realized that wasn't fair. You know, guys were running 17.5 cars in the mod class and making the A main. So it was just crazy. And then we got Blinky and the Roar rules and settled everything down a little bit. And then we spent a decade with motors that are questionable, flat illegal, and played all those games. But, you know, finally now we've settled down, I think, where we finally have some decent spec racing. But I would give Boost the credit for really getting everybody's attention at that point. You know, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, everybody calls their stuff Boost and Turbo. You know, those were ours. And in fact, we tried to even trademark those names and they wouldn't give it to us. But, you know, everybody calls it that now. It's just kind of a common thing, like a Heister and a forklift, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
So looking, now that you look back, looking now, you know, how, what are your top sellers? What are your bread and butter products?
Well, the RX-8 is always solid. 8-scale, you know, we got that system pretty well nailed and have for an awfully long time. But we do fine in the 10 scale stuff as well. We share it with more people. I think more people have a slice of the pie, and, you know, crawlers as well, you know, crawlers a little more price sensitive. And so there's a lot of products that cost less. Now, that certainly hurts us in some areas, and, you know, drag racing, certainly we have some of the top equipment in drag racing. You know, the RS Pro is second to none in terms of low resistance and power handling, and, you know, has same features that anybody has. I mean, we've all got pretty close stuff nowadays. We've had a decade to work on it, and you know, had a lot of good examples. In fact, anything we created showed up everywhere else within a year or two, which is, you got to expect that.
Yeah.
I think all the features that we've added have ended up in most places. I don't think they do it as well, but, you know, they at least have a version of it.
Sure. So I've been involved in the hobby for a relatively short period of time, especially when I compare myself to some of the other folks that I know. I'm coming up on 9 years in, you know, January, so just a few days. In that time, though, I've seen quite a few changes around the tech of the hobby, and you've already talked about a couple of these. So when, you know, when you took over Tekken, LiPo was becoming a thing. Now LiPo is really the way to go for battery power. From your view, what have been some of the most significant enhancements and changes in technology in the last 1 to 2 years, narrowing that window down a little bit?
I'm not sure there's been technology leaps necessarily. The batteries have gotten better.
Okay.
Some of the components have gotten better. You know, the power components we use. There's a wide range of a lot of components, and some of them that people don't really notice necessarily that are driving things internally or part of the back. But it comes down to the MOSFETs. I mean, that's where the power comes through.
Okay.
And those are always improving. And the good ones cost a lot more money. You know, they're not as available. You got 16-week, heck, right now, more like in the 28-week lead times on the high-end parts. You know, the stuff that everybody uses is available, you know, because it's out there. But that high-end stuff can be a little hard, and that's been a lot of the challenges this year to really keep things flowing. You know, there's been a lot of supply chain challenges. And so I don't know if there's been any huge tech advantages. We're always smoothing things out. You know, the hardware is pretty decent, so a lot of it is software, certainly, for efficiency and features.
So flipping that on its head for a bit, how do you see RC electronics and RC tech evolving in the next few years? Let's, you know, put whatever number on it you want. Is there anything that you see on the immediate to distant horizon that is really close to being the next big thing? Or a game changer?
Well, yeah, we're really limited by how fast the cars can go. And most of the systems, once you get out of spec classes, most guys drive too much speed anyhow. They'd be faster with a slower setup. In fact, how many people will admit that they run their best laps when the battery's half dead, right? Listen to what that tells you. You know, you're more consistent. You hit your marks. And how many people really miss that going fast is more about slowing down than going fast?
Right.
Everybody can squeeze the trigger coming out of a corner. The way you go fast is slowing down and going the right speed around the corners, which is brakes and feel and anticipation. So, excuse me. So, again, it comes down to features, because all the cars will go faster than the cars can handle until we get to the spec classes. And even those are awfully fast nowadays. A 17.5 is not slow. You know, like, they get around the track pretty cleanly. Oh, I don't know. It's a good question. We're always looking at that as well. We're always learning. You give people new features to improve the feel. You give them some data logs so they can really see the information where it matters, like drag racing and even spec racing. I think guys who pay attention and notice that, hey, I'm finishing at 7.8 volts. And if I could finish at 7.9 or 8.0, then I've got more RPM at the end of the race. And am I blowing out power because I've got a big ass fan? Or have I just got too much timing? You know, do I drive too hard? Do I apex hard and have to restart the car every corner instead of rolling around the corner? Right, there's a lot of subtlety, which is what makes the hobby so much fun. There's so many pieces to the puzzle. I think we just try and make it easy for people to get started. If anything, our stuff's a little complicated, and I think that intimidates some people. There's a lot of settings in there that they don't understand, and they're really, honestly, even sometimes hard to explain. RPM brakes, that we know what it does.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
We try and give you a slider that if it goes up, there's more of it, and if it goes down, there's less of it. But something like RPM brakes, what does that actually mean? But I think that's where we really pay attention to what people need. And that's a good example of a feature that is really only for a handful of people that asked us, and hey, you know, I get my brakes right at high speed and I don't like them at the mid throttle and on the infield. And so can you give me more brakes? And so we were like, sure, you know, let's make it relative to the RPM and give you a slider so that you can get those things. And then you got to mix that with frequency and all these other things. And it gets a little complicated, but in the end, if you get a feel you like, it makes it easier to drive.
That it does. So more or less the big squid crowd is, you know, focused on bashers. However, you know, you do see a lot of crossover. A lot of, you know, hobbyists like to dabble in different areas of the hobby. Maybe they've got a RTR and they want to look at going racing, or they want to look at doing something else. For the folks that want to, you know, that have an eye at toward racing and on track competition, what are some tips that you would give folks that are just starting out fresh when it comes to, you know, picking electronics and putting the pieces together?
You know, even without the equipment choices, because I really do want to see RC be healthy as a whole, and I'd rather they buy Tekken, but I'm just as happy to somebody that doesn't have the budget or already has some RTR stuff to see them out racing and moving up. It's, you know, start slow and work up. Too many people start fast and have to go backwards, and they're just breaking their car. They can't make the corners. They're inconsistent. You know, be slow. Fastest lap's not what wins, and then go faster. And a lot of times you can start with what you have. Now, coming out of the RTR systems, they tend to be sensorless. More of them are censored now. The sensorless for racing isn't that good, especially if you start and stop a lot. You know, a smooth racer can run sensorless pretty well because they keep it rolling, but it still doesn't have the reaction time to really be able to feel it. And, you know, the spec classes are a good place to start, but don't kid yourself that they're not ultra competitive and more expensive if you really want to be on top or even really out with the big boys. You know, they're not beginner classes. They're harder.
Yeah.
You know, you're better to drive slow in a mod car than you are to try and keep up with the boys who have spec cars dialed. So have realistic expectations. These guys that race a couple weekends a month, if not every week, maybe twice a week, they've been doing it a long time. And if you can just walk out and compete with them in a week or a month or even a season, then it's not really very hard, is it?
No.
You know, right. you gotta pay your dues. You gotta learn what matters. No, that's part of what I enjoy about the hobby. I enjoy suspension. I you know, that's something that really intrigues me. And it's amazing how different people like their car set up different. though there are some of the pro level setups that I guarantee you most people would not like, because they're not easy to drive, you know, and knowing how to set your car up to make it easier to drive helps a lot as well. Right. A little push can be nice.
Yeah.
It's no fun having the tail come around. Too much steering is hard to deal with.
Yeah. Those are some good tips. Those are some real good tips.
A lot of these guys aren't going to go racing. A lot of these guys are just out having fun. They just don't want it to break. They want it to be fast. All right. They want to have good run time. And even there, you need a decent setup so that you're not making everything hot. But as people come out of the RTR cars, they need to at least have a basic understanding of what they're replacing it with, because you probably need to change your pinion. That's probably the number one mistake we see is, you know, you change the motor to something that's got twice the RPM, but you don't change the gearing. Now you're way over geared and everything gets hot and stressed. And so I think that's probably step one, is make sure you understand the power plant. And that goes for voltage as well. Changing voltage from 2S to 3S to 4S. 4S is twice as fast as 2S, straight up. It's voltage. Right? And why we sell different motors for different voltages. You know, if you're really trying to dial it for a racetrack, we have specific motors for each voltage.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. You know, for a hobby, it's rather complex.
It's as complex as you want it to be, or as simple as you want it to be.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
In all cases, you know, watch heat. Heat is the summation of all things evil. If you at least keep an eye on your stuff, you can tell when it's getting hot. If you drive it through knee-high grass wide open till the battery's dead, of course it's going to be. But if you're just zooming up and down the road, really driving along isn't as much work as starting, you know, or being stuck against things. But right. If stuff's getting hot, then clearly you're pushing it. And maybe you don't mind. Right. You know, they have thermal shutdowns and things that protect them. But, you know, obviously it's working hard.
So far, I haven't blown anything up, knock on wood. But I don't really run my stuff too hard either.
Well, there's lots of ways, lots of different cards. All right. You know, slamming forward in reverse, changing direction quickly, you know, towing your kid in a wagon. You know, driving in the sand, the knee-high grass thing, hard tires roll smooth. So yeah. That's not a lot of friction, but yeah.
Yeah, while I haven't blown anything up, I've definitely broken some parts and replaced my fair share of servos and whatnot. It is what you make of it, you know, the hobby is. We touched on this earlier, but it seems every year, or maybe every couple of years, a new genre of the hobby gains traction. And sometimes, you know, something will pop up and it doesn't catch, and then years later, it catches on like wildfire. We've seen crawlers. We've seen dragsters over the last couple of years. Monster trucks, I think this year for monster trucks is a rather big year. All of these have gained immense popularity. What areas do you specifically like developing products for, looking at just, you know, these items, the crawlers, dragsters, and monster trucks? Do you have a favorite of those? And what areas, if any, do you think will be the next to emerge?
Well, those are questions we're always trying to think about, certainly looking forward. It's some things are hard to predict. Drag racing's been around. I think the shutdowns, the whole COVID thing kind of brought a lot of that out, just because people couldn't go to racetracks and they could meet in parking lots. And it's a whole different genre and attitude, really, an all or nothing. And they started racing for money, which gets people attention right there. There's not a lot of money in RC.
Yeah.
But these guys showing up and racing for $500, $2,000 on a Saturday and having fun doing it. You know, so it's a whole different mindset. 2 seconds, you know, compared to a hike on the crawlers. And
yeah.
thank goodness for Traxxas, because, you know, they lead a lot of these. They saved us with the short course truck years ago, and then they always tend to fade out of the way. It becomes a race class, and, you know, they have the dragster thing going, but it started based as a slash, which a lot of people have. They're fairly durable, and it now is evolving into a race class where you don't have a chance with a slash, obviously. But for just going out and having fun, when people aren't that serious, then they can. Because a lot of it's just trying to go straight, especially right. If they don't run too much motor. You know, I hope this 13.5 thing catches on. That seems to be a decent speed that most people can get down the track. and they're not just blowing through things. Kind of makes other things matter, your reaction time, your car setup, that kind of stuff. But this open class, I mean, holy smokes, you know, they're going to race for what, $24,000 in Vegas, you know, 29 if you win it with Tekken in it. So that's a lot of cash.
No kidding.
Yeah, I think some of them are grassroots that you don't know it as much. You do now because of the internet and social media, but there's so many things that were going on, but nobody really was as aware of it. And RC racing in general is that way, because racetracks tend to be in out-of-the-way places. They're tough businesses. A lot of them are just volunteers, and so they're not in places where you really see them. You know, expensive real estate. They're in broken down malls and old fields and buildings at the back. And so people didn't even realize it's there. I can't tell you how many people, when we tell them what we do for a living and that people make a living racing RC cars, not very many of them, and they travel hard for it, that they're like, wow, I didn't even know they did that. Oh, you know, we just don't get a lot of visibility, unfortunately. And the internet has helped that, certainly. Social media, now people know.
It's looking at it as a spectator sport, it's a tough one to wrap your head around. And it's a tough one to frame and do justice as a spectator sport. But if you're in it and you live it and you know, eat, sleep, breathe it, then it's the greatest thing in the world, especially if you're doing well. And even if you're just out there to have fun, it's got its perks as well. You bring up a really good point about the internet and social media really shining lights on and shining attention on some of these areas that have been around for a while, but no one really knew about them. I think crawling for me was one of those areas where it was around before I knew about it. And then I found out about it and it seemed like everybody was doing it. And same thing for drag racing. I'm not even sure if there's another area that hasn't already been touched by the RC industry or had an element of RC applied to it. But can you think of anything? Like, can you think of what might the next thing be, even if it's a grassroots thing?
You know, it'll probably be my kid, Ty, who sees that coming. Okay. And you've seen Ty in our build videos and all of that.
Yeah.
Ty's been doing RC since he was a week old. You know, he was at the RC track the weekend after he was born, and clearly he wasn't driving yet at that point, but he's been building crawlers from scratch since he was little, and the little Overland cars, and you know, he's been into planes, he's been into boats. Obviously, we raced competitively for a long time. I mean, he's raced at the national level, ran with the big boys.
Yeah.
And he's a semi-pro. You know, you don't make the A when the Drakes and the Lutzes are there, but you're in the race. And lately, he's into tractors. So front end loaders and excavators and dump trucks. And I don't know if there's much for Tekken in there, but point is, if there's something new coming along, he's probably going to see it a little bit before me. But you're right, we've RC'd about everything.
Yeah.
And let's face it, electric motors are going to drive the world, and already do to some point. And batteries, right? Batteries has always been the limiter factor.
Right, yeah.
Now that those are good. I mean, now the batteries last long enough that you really need a break before you run out of juice.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I don't have voltage cut off very often. Certainly not in race cars. I mean, you're wasting your time. Out in a basher car, maybe. But, you know, we've got snow cats, you know, with tracks and stuff. So, you know, lots of ways to have fun.
There's no shortage of fun in the hobby.
The tugboats. You ever seen the tugboat competitions?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, these guys that had set out floating ships, and they drive the tugboat, and you know, it's timed, and you got to put the ship where it goes.
Oh, that's cool.
we've got quite a few guys that we've set up with systems for that stuff. Just nice low RPM stuff that they've got good control.
That's cool. The more I think about it, the cooler that sounds. Is, I guess, odd as it might be to hear myself say that. Going back to crawling, people, at least myself, use myself as a test case here. When I got into the hobby, the whole point was to get a hobby grade car that went fast. Well, you can only go fast so long before it gets a little boring, or you run out of room, or you've broken so much stuff. You know, the list goes on and on. And crawling to me at the time didn't seem that appealing. But once, you know, as soon as I picked up that controller and drove, you know, slowly, my first time, it's like a light bulb went off, and I can understand the beauty in going slow.
If technical.
Yeah, technical. Right, right. And you can take it in any direction you want. You can go super scale. You could slap a cheap polycarbonate body on it and just, you know, roll it off of rocks and just have fun. You can go any, you know, in the middle. It's pretty fantastic. But when you think about it, it's, you know, going slow doesn't seem like fun, but, you know, that tugboat thing at first, you know, it's like, huh, I can kind of see that.
Yeah, well, there's a strategy, and you're right on the crawlers. You know, I thought they were a little silly in the beginning, and I think if you treat it like a toy, then it is a toy. If you just hold the throttle and bounce over everything like a toy, then that's what it is. But if you slow down and pretend that you really don't want to spill your cooler,
right,
and knock your girlfriend out the side door, and you don't want to roll it over and do body damage, then it gets to be a lot more fun. And, you know, I ended up building a crawler course all around my house with rocks over years, collecting rocks, you know, technical things and bridges and all of that, and just a good hike, you know, and you've got the small tire crawlers that are guys who are really skilled. Mm-hmm. Again, like Ty can take a crawler through things that most people can't get through with a Yeti, and, you know, and just to watch somebody be able to place a tire and have just the right momentum and a little throttle pop here and there and walk through things, you know, it's a skill like any other. Or you drive the Yeti, you just hammer it and you blow through it.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, there's a lot of ways. You know, you go to things like Axial Fest, you see such a diverse crowd of people. Now, there are no hands, winches, toe straps, and then the guys who are just kicking it with their foot.
Yeah,
just right. Going for a hike. Yeah. And in the early crawling, when they were doing the real technical short courses, it was points, negative points for using reverse and all of that, which was another way to do it. I'm glad it evolved into things more like the G6.
Yeah.
And those types of events, which is just a whole weekend of fun. And some of the guys still do those really technical scale courses where there's 10 gates and most people don't make it through gate 4 or 5.
Wow.
You know, if you don't finish the course.
And, yeah.
You know, some of them, nobody finishes it, or it comes down to time, who finished it faster. But they were small courses, you know, the old comp rigs and some of that stuff.
When just going to stick on crawlers for a few more moments, if you don't mind, most, a good majority of crawler motors are brushed, but now within recent years, we've seen brushless become more and more popular. If someone has a brushed system or they're looking to go brushless, what, in your view, what are the pros and cons between the two?
Well, first, there's a big price difference. And so if you have no budget, brushless is going to last forever. Brush takes a little maintenance, you know, certainly cheaper to get started, but the brushes do wear out. And you'd be amazed how many people call us and say, my motor's not working, and we have them pull the brushes out, and it's because they're gone. they just don't realize, you know, you have to replace the brushes.
Sure.
But honestly, for feel, I still like a brushed system in a very delicate 10 scale rig. Now, we've gotten pretty close with the brushless, but I still think you get a little better feel. But for long hikes and the power and having the range of wheel speed to be able to go really slow and have the wheel speed to pop over something, the brushless is pretty hard to beat. Now that we've added some features that took a lot of work to make those feel better, and that's one of our biggest developments in the last couple of years, is the active drag brake, which gets away, you know, gets rid of the downhill runaway.
Yeah.
That we all suffered, right? You got max drag brake on and you're pointing downhill and you touch 1% throttle and drag brake's gone and away you go coasting, and then you let go and boom, front end up.
Yeah.
And, you know, our active drag brake allows you to literally throttle downhill. I mean, you drive downhill with the trigger.
Nice.
I mean, that was probably one of the biggest night and day changes that I've seen in a lot of years. Just made crawling so much more fun, so much more realistic. because real rigs don't crest over a rock and then fall clear off the other side coasting forward.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're in those granny gears. And it made it so much more realistic and so much more fun to be able to drive downhill and really drive in general. And it ended up being a heck of a good race feature. We really developed it for crawling, but turned way down, it's almost magic on a racetrack, especially a loamy club track without a lot of traction. Holy smokes, you can set that to where you don't even need brakes. You just let throttle down and the car slows down. And you can do it on high bite carpet stuff too. It's not the fastest way to get around the track, but for people who struggle going from throttle to brake and they overbrake and that's what messes them up, they unsettle the car. To start out again as a beginner, you crank that up a little bit and all you do is drop throttle to 10, 20% and the car slows down to that speed and you never actually go to neutral. So it's an interesting way to drive. It's a different trigger, but a lot of guys really appreciate that active drag on the racetrack just because of the transition from throttle to drag brake. You don't get that little nose drop when you hit neutral. It's smoother and it doesn't unsettle the car.
Sure. Wow. That's really cool. It's neat that that application found an additional calling, I'll say, beyond the crawling world. That's really interesting. And just, I should go back and say, you know, I started out my question with brushed versus brushless and, you know, what's the pros and cons, but you brought up a really good point. The ESC is really, you know, the brains behind the whole operation as well. With the right ESC, with the right amount of features and programmability, you know, you can do amazing things with any type of motor. Are there things that people maybe don't consider or maybe gloss over with an ESC and what makes a one ESC better for a specific application?
Almost all of it, unless they're into the hobby. I can't tell you how many times we've had somebody at an Axial Fest or something and say, dude, give me your radio for a second and make a few tweaks to their car, put a little expo in the radio, soften everything up and hand it back to them. And they just go, oh my goodness, wow. You know, and off they go with a big smile on their face. Just because it was touchy, you know, and just the expo on the radio, just adding a little curve to the radio. Just small things that you pick up as you go, unless you're just slamming the trigger and letting go anyhow. But if you're trying to have some feel, and I think the same is true on the racetrack. You know, a lot of people are just trigger slammers and brake slammers, and so the settings aren't doing much. But if you learn to use it as a throttle, then those settings start to be pretty effective. And there's enough of them in there, you can almost make an easy button. You turn on the torque limiters, you turn on some active brake, and everything soften everything up a little bit and put curves in it. And it's almost like having an AVC receiver, except for you still have to steer.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you, or guess that you have your own personal machines, whether they be crawlers or racing vehicles or whatever. What is your go-to?
Again, two-wheel drive buggy, if the track is right, is probably still my favorite. And then eight-scale buggy, because you got the big supercross tracks, you know, big, tall, six-foot jumps, 30-foot tip-to-tip stuff. Oh, I like tracks that blow out a little bit rather than the really groomed ones, just because I think that's part of racing. Holes develop, braking bumps, lines change. It's about paying attention. I think a lot of the tracks are too perfect, and I understand why people have gone to AstroTurf off-road. It's just easier. It's not dirty and all of that, but you know, you don't have the variation and just have so much traction. You know, it becomes missile racing corner to corner. Mm-hmm. So I still enjoy getting a TC set up well too. The precision of TC, consistency, you know, that takes a lot of focus. Come right out the door and drive good laps there. You know, same with oval. Well, they don't do as much of it, but I suppose if I really had a choice, it's the big outdoor tracks where I can run eight scale buggies, and the track's in good enough shape you can also get a two wheel around it.
Do you have a go to make and model, or as long as it's running Tekken, you don't care?
we get along with a lot of the brands. We've run Losi for a lot of years. I think they have good products, and we run a lot of techno cars. Those are probably the two main ones, at least in our off-road fleets.
Okay.
You know, Ty does a lot of builds on the videos that he tries to kind of mix it up and the different genres of whatever's going on. Obviously right now, drag car stuff. And he's done a lot of crawler stuff. I don't know if you've seen the Dakar trucks and the military trucks that our team has made from the frame rails up, designed, drawn, and 3D printed every part on those trucks.
Yeah, I've seen some of those. They are fantastic.
Yeah.
The detail is mind-blowing.
Incredible amount of time and effort into those. You know, between the designer drawing all the parts and getting them all made and getting it all put together. So, you know, that's that next level of the hobby.
Yeah, so when you mentioned the you know, various brands, I'm looking at your the Tekin Racing Instagram page right now, and I see a repost from something that Ty posted, and he's got 7 different kits that look to be ready to be built at some point in time, all from different makes and models, and I'm sure definitely every one of them will have some Tekin aspect in them or controlling them. So going back to drag racing for just another bit, because that fascinates me on a number of levels. What was your initial reaction to, you know, getting into the drag racing scene from a power plant standpoint?
I knew we were in big trouble just because the expectations of people were going to be toy level, that I go out and slam the trigger and do it back and forth all I want, like I have with my RC cars mm-hmm. before. And yet they're trying to make cars go as fast as possible for 132 feet in 2 seconds. We give them a lot of features that are meant to be used in moderation based on the feel and the track, and they just crank them all to the max. So, not a surprise. Hey, somebody told me that if you add timing, it goes faster. And so they turn up the motor, turn up the boost, turn up the turbo, put a big pinion on it. And then they wonder why they blew the solder off the power board in a 2 second pass. I mean, you know, these batteries are powerful. Yeah. They can pass 300 amps. If you believe the C ratings on them, they can pass 1,000 amps. But, you know, that's a lot of power. And honestly, the controllers can handle the power. There's a lot of other factors that happen in there, that, you know, signals and misfires and motors that aren't shimmed right. Rotors are too far from the sensor board, sensors that aren't good to begin with. There's just a lot of tricky little things in there that can make things go bad. And the drag crowd has suffered a lot of failures of all the brands. And I've talked to a lot of the other brands. You know, everybody had to go through some pain there to get people educated. And we've made a real public effort to get out there and try and show people what they're doing wrong and what a reasonable expectation is. We never dreamed people would run 2.5 turn motors with all the timing cranked up and a huge pinion and slam full wood on sticky tires over and over again. You know, it wasn't really what we were anticipating.
Sure.
But the guys who have a reasonable setup, it's impressive how well these are handling. These guys are pulling 300 amps and doing hundreds of runs. And as long as they don't have things ridiculously set up, it's handling it. So that's why education is so important, because people don't always take it well. And some take it well, but still it's expensive. They're expensive lessons.
Yeah, indeed, especially if you're blowing through electronics due to over-aggressive tuning, we'll just call it that.
or just driving it like a car. I've posted a number of data logs to kind of show people you can't pull the trigger 9 times in 90 seconds, you know, with these kind of setups. And I think they're also learning that everybody, what's the fastest motor? The 2.5. Well, then I'll have one. Well, guess what? Actually, the fastest motor running drag might be a 4.0 or a 4.5, because you can't get it to the ground anyways. Mm-hmm. And the 2.5 is really just giving you trouble. And it's making things break loose, and you're not making clean runs. And so everybody just kind of shoots too far, getting back to that start slow and move up instead of fast and go backwards.
Right. Yeah, that's...
No. There's a lot to going fast in a drag car. I really respect what these guys are doing that can do it consistently. You know, that is shocks and tweak on the chassis and all the setup factors and knowing how to get the power to the ground and having a steering servo that doesn't wobble when the ESC is under heavy load. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times I see guys saying, oh, yeah, the RTR servo works fine for me. And you're like, you don't really know if that's why you're hitting the walls or not. Well, how much wiggle does it take at 50 miles an hour to send your car out of line? So it all matters.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's fun about drag racing. And I think on any given day, it's not the fastest car that wins. It's might be the smartest guy. Who knows? The traction's not good right now. I got to tune it back. All I got to do is beat the guy next to me. And I don't have to have the fastest time of the day unless the guy next to me runs it. I think Vegas will be interesting to see the different approaches that guys come after with that much money on the line. And because it is one loss and you're done. So you can't really make a mistake on the setup. You know, obviously if you're lined up against somebody that you know is going to go fast, and I can name a few of them here, Ricky and Mark Vine, and you know, there's some guys there that if he's next to you, you better strap it up. But it'll be interesting to see who can make it through that many heats.
Yeah. So can you speak to that a little bit? So there's a lot of money on the line, as you said, but even more if you're running Tekken, is that correct?
Yeah, we threw a bonus out there.
Okay.
You win with the Tekken ESC and a motor, another $5,000 on top of the prize, just to have a little fun here. And since these guys are putting on this big show, and it's going to be exciting. It's never happened before.
It looks like an amazing event, and I'm very interested to see who walks away with the cash. And then ultimately, what does that do for drag racing, for RC drag racing? Does it draw more attention? Does it get more people interested? You know, big events like this, big splash events like this, hopefully can help push the hobby into bigger and better things. And as crazy as this sounds, I think this year has been a really good one for the hobby, because people have been looking for things to do by themselves or with small groups of people. And well, there's no better hobby to isolate yourself with than the RC hobby. So we'll definitely have to see what 2021 holds, but I think there's a lot of bright spots on the future.
Yeah, this definitely for hobbies in general, crayons, coloring books, you know, everybody was stuck at home.
Yeah.
And we'll see if that carries on through next year. How many people stick with it? I think some people maybe refound the hobby and some people discovered it for the first time, but a lot of people got their stuff out, took a look at it, maybe went out and had some fun and remembered how much fun it was. Tracks is the hard part. And even without this last year, tracks are always kind of a tough situation for people if we have good race facilities.
That's a good point. That's a real good point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's most of the tracks are really put on by people who just put their heart and soul into it. They get nothing out of it financially. You know, they really just get a lot of ass ache from people who are always complaining, to tell you the truth. And, you know, that's why a lot of them burn out, because I don't know if you've never gone out and built an off-road dirt track. It's no small task. We rebuild the Tekken track now and then, and it's a big project.
Yeah, I haven't even dreamt of building an off-road track. I've seen people, videos and pictures of people doing that task, and my hat is off to them. It's something that I don't have the, I don't know if I have the willpower to do that. So it's a big labor of love, definitely, for the people that run and operate those tracks and maintain them.
Yep. And RD and run the show and often hardly even get to race themselves. Yeah. And some of them are promoters that do it professionally. Some of these guys make tracks professionally. But, you know, that's certainly where a lot of the club tracks struggle.
Yeah.
Come out. And it varies, comes and goes. That's why you always have to get new people into the hobby. And why are we trying to educate people so they have less problems, whether or not they have Tekin? Is the more people that are doing it and tell other people, and then more people show up and just makes for more fun, meet more people, more experiences. It's good for the kids. There's so much to be learned out of RC for young people, girls and boys, how to maintain your equipment, how to handle failure, how to handle winning, you know, how to handle other people misbehaving. And there's just a lot of good things that come out of it.
Indeed. Yeah, there are many, many lessons to be learned from this hobby, no matter what age you are. So you mentioned education, and you know, Tekin is involved in a number of social media platforms, and I'm just venturing a guess that you use those to help educate people. If people want to learn more about Tekin, about RC, about anything that you are involved in, what are some of the best ways for them to do that?
Well, we're always building our video library. It is a lot of good builds, and a lot of those videos, if you watch them, 20% of it is about the Tekin stuff. A lot of times it is more about the car build and the whole engagement. I think people enjoy that more. I tend to do the nerdy kind of stuff, seems to play better through my channels.
Okay.
Because people can ask me questions. We don't get nearly as much engagement on our technical educational post on the Tekin site. I think people read it. They just don't engage as well because it's impersonal, perhaps. And, you know, Ty has his area that he focuses on, the crawler area, for a long time, since he's really into that. And it used to be the racing. He just is not traveling as much. He's got young kids now, and that gets a little tough. We still both love to race. We're just a long ways from any organized racing. Tekin's not really in a very good location for RC racing travel.
Gotcha.
But I think that we're always trying to figure out how to reach people, but I think the YouTube videos, because they're there forever, things about soldering, things about setup issues and that kind of stuff that people can refer back to, just because there is a lot, just the radial calibrate step, right? If you're not into RC or you've got different products and you forget how each ESC works. So we definitely have a long list of videos yet to be produced.
Well, it's good to hear that there's more educational content coming, and a lot that's already been posted and out there for viewing. So if you're looking to get more RC education, definitely check out the Tekin YouTube channel and channels to learn more about, well, anything RC, basically.
Yeah, you know, and our team drivers. We're pretty selective with our team driver selections, and it isn't necessarily about the fastest guys. In fact, often the fastest guys aren't that social and helpful. We like to have the guys that are willing to help you out when you have a problem and stop what they're doing or loan you something. And so I'm pretty proud of our team and what they do. And, you know, they're a pretty solid group of people that really enjoy RC. And we're not all about just saying buy Tekin. I mean, we want people to go out and have fun, and we hope that maybe you pick Tekin because you decide we make good stuff and you like the support. But I think that if the guys are wearing a team driver shirt, then, you know, go up and say hi.
That's a really good, really good educational avenue that I think maybe has been forgotten, definitely this year with, you know, less in-person connection. But, you know, the team drivers that you have and other brands have are a great resource as well. And it sounds like you've got a great group of folks that know the hobby inside and out. Good on you for assembling that crew.
Yeah, well, Randy gets a little credit for that. He was our team manager for many, many years, and now it's Ty. And Ty and I both look at that, but that's the one who deals with all of them.
Well, we are... It's like either rolling up on an hour or pretty close to just eclipsing an hour. So with that, Jim, I do want to thank you for taking the time to join me and chat with me about your time in the hobby and to learn more about Tekin. What is the best, if there was one resource online for folks to check out for Tekin, would it be the Tekin website?
Well, that's where it starts. Okay. You know, that's the big umbrella that we hope they come in, and then we can take them where we want. Unfortunately, a lot of people are on mobile, and the sites don't often play out as well there. But yeah, I think you go to there, you can get into our setups, you can find the videos, and you can just ask us questions. You know, we've got a couple of different avenues through email and the messenger that we try and keep up on. In fact, I was talking to 10 or 15 people right before this show that are sometimes just easy questions or things they're trying to figure out, you know, that kind of on-demand resource keeps them moving.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. Fantastic.
Well, again, now to be fair, I'm not always on Facebook, so don't be offended if I don't answer for 2 or 3 days because, well, I don't live on social media as much, but I catch up eventually.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's fair. That's fair. That's a good note to throw in there as well. Well, again, thank you very much for the time, Jim. I know I've really appreciated and enjoyed this chat, and don't be a stranger if you ever want to have more things to chat about. Let me know, and we'd be more than happy to have you back on the Big Squid RC podcast.
Yeah, we need to find some hard questions. That's what I'm best at.
I'll see what I can do.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Tim.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you once again to Jim Campbell for joining me on this episode of the Big Squid RC podcast. As always, it's a fun chat. I love getting to hear these inside stories. Getting to know more people in the hobby is, it's a pinch me moment. I really appreciate the opportunity. And thanks to you for listening to the show. That's really the most important part, that you're checking us out. If you want to check out more episodes of the show, the Big Squid RC podcast, you can do so by going to bigsquidrc.com, clicking on the podcast link in the menu, and you will find all of our previous episodes. If you would like to subscribe to the show, if you haven't done that yet, you can do that through pretty much any major podcasting app or podcasting client or podcatching client or whatever you want to call it, even a voice-activated assistant, whether it's an Amazon Alexa or a Google Nest device or anything. Look up or search for the Big Squid RC podcast, and we should be there. If we're not, well, let us know, and we'll do what we can to get listed on those different devices. Also, if you're looking for the latest news, reviews, event information, anything having to do with the world of radio control, check out bigsquidrc.com. In fact, we are in the very early days of 2021. 2020 is finally in the rearview mirror. But, you know, the Big Squid folks like to take a look back and really crown a couple things like our Bash Vehicle of the Year and our Scale Vehicle of the Year and Product of the Year. So check out bigsquidrc.com, get that information and a lot more, all having to do with the RC hobby. With that, this has been Tim with the Big Squid RC Podcast. Until next time, we will talk with you later.